Well, and as we'll show you, a lot of other things were happening over the summer. We have been keeping track of COVID-19 related litigation. And so nationwide, and you know, these numbers were as of a few days ago, and the accuracy depends on the person interpreting the data, but there were 6,196 complaints filed that related to COVID-19 litigation. And of those, nationwide, 442 related to contractual disputes and 464 related to landlord, tenant, or other property disputes. Now, here in Texas, we've been tracking about 450 complaints that have been filed that are related to COVID-19. And what's interesting to me is of these complaints, 70 are related to contractual disputes, 71 are related to landlord, tenant, and other property disputes. But from a percentage basis, about 31% of the complaints filed in Texas that are related to COVID-19 have to do with either contractual disputes or property disputes, and many of them have to do with force majeure clauses. And that's much higher because nationwide, it's only about 15%. So as Frank said, we're going to talk to you about the force majeure clause today, and I thought it would be helpful to go through the force majeure clause generally, so everyone's on the same at the same starting point, and then walk through the history of the force majeure clause and how it was developed and where it came from. And then I will turn it over to Sophia so that Sophia can talk about her experience drafting leases and the force majeure clause in the lease, as well as deciding whether or not to amend a force majeure clause and things like that. So first of all, as most of you know, a force majeure clause is an affirmative defense. A party to a contract who is unable to perform may assert a force majeure provision to a contract to excuse the performance. So it provides an excuse for the party's non-performance when it's caused by circumstances beyond the reasonable control of the party. Now, the term force majeure generally refers to an event such as an act of God, an event that's beyond the reasonable control of the parties to a lease that intervenes to create a contractual impossibility and thereby excuses the performance under the lease. So force majeure clauses actually were created in English common law. In the case of Taylor v. Caldwell, Taylor and Caldwell entered into a contract in which they had contracted to let the plaintiff use the Surrey Gardens and the music hall on four certain days. After signing the contract, but prior to the first day in which the plaintiff was going to use the music hall, the hall was destroyed by fire. And the destruction was without any fault to any of the parties to the contract. Now, the plaintiff sought to enforce the contract, and the court found that the defendant was discharged from performing and the failure to perform was not a breach of contract. The court held that in contracts in which the performance depends on the continued existence of a given person or thing, a condition is implied that the impossibility of performance arising from the perishing of the person or thing shall excuse performance. Thus, when the music hall caught fire and was no longer usable, then the defendant was excused from performance. Well, and Taylor was decided in 1863, and then about 20 years later, the force majeure clause crossed the Atlantic. In the United States, the force majeure was developed by common law in the case of the tornado. The tornado, interestingly to me, actually had two cases that went up to the Supreme Court. The tornado was a ship that was docked in the harbor off the coast of Louisiana. And the owner of the tornado had contracted with a seller of goods to deliver bales of cotton. After the bales of cotton were loaded, the tornado caught fire and sunk to the bottom of the harbor before the ship commenced the voyage and was rendered unseaworthy. So again, the owner of the goods tried to enforce the contract. The Supreme Court of the United States then expressly adopted the rule in Taylor that where the agreement of two contracting parties contemplates a specific set of circumstances that can no longer be performed, both parties are excused from performance. Therefore, the fact that the ship was rendered unseaworthy excused the performance of the contract.